Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to House Call, talking equity markets with UBS Asset Management for this month's episode. Glad to once again be joined by Jeremy Zierin, Senior Portfolio Manager for the House View Equity Portfolios and Head of the Private Client U.S. Equity Team, along with Dominique Shager, Lead Equity Investment Specialist, joining us today from UBS Asset Management. So Dom will guide today's conversation with Jeremy. They will focus their time on recent market developments and how they're shaping UBS Asset Management's thinking within the House View equity portfolio. So with that, Dom, let me now turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Dan. It's great to be back, and we appreciate you having us on. So, Jeremy, there's a lot going on, so let's get started. After a strong May and a volatile start to June, U.S. equities continue to move higher, pushing back towards record highs. From your perspective, what has been the primary drivers of the rally, and what stood out the most to you?
Yeah, thanks, Dom. I frame the rally as a market that's been climbing the proverbial wall of worry, you know, largely due to strong underlying equity fundamentals. Right? We've had a lot for investors to digest, whether it's geopolitical disruption, concerns around oil supply, higher bond yields, questions about AI-related parts of the market, whether they've moved too far too fast. Yet equities have been remarkably resilient. And the main reason, in my view, is that the earnings backdrop has been strong enough to offset a lot of those concerns. You know, U.S. companies just reported the fastest earnings growth in 4 years in the first quarter, with S&P 500 earnings up roughly 20% year on year. And that marked the sixth consecutive quarter of double-digit earnings growth. And that sustained fundamental strength has helped support investor confidence, even as macro uncertainty has remained elevated. And at the same time, forward earnings expectations have moved significantly higher, reinforcing the view that earnings, not just sentiment, has been supporting the rally. And so quantifying this a bit, the rolling 12-month forward consensus earnings estimate for the S&P 500 started this year at $311, and today it stands at $364, fully 17% higher in under 6 months. At the end of the day, Dom, earnings drive stock prices, and forward-looking earnings estimates at a market level are one of the best gauges of the health of the earnings cycle. The second market driver has been continued enthusiasm around AI, including the infrastructure build-out, increased AI utilization and enterprise penetration, and clearer signs of productivity gains accruing to users of AI. And what's important here is that it's not just a sentiment story. You can really see in the earnings for semiconductor companies and other AI-linked areas of the market, like energy, industrials, and tech hardware, where a real step function higher in demand for AI is driving a lot of those positive earnings revisions. And what has stood out to me also is that the economy has been able to absorb higher oil prices from the Middle East conflict, higher bond yields, much better than people had expected. But it really shouldn't come as too much of a surprise if you do the math. I think we've spoken about this on prior calls. The rule of thumb from econometric models is that every $10 increase in oil prices, if sustained for several months, shaves off about 0.1% of GDP. So if we've seen a $40 jump in oil prices, mathematically that should shave off about half a percentage point of GDP. The economy has been running between 2 to 2.5% GDP growth. So shaving off a half a point certainly isn't large enough to derail the economic expansion, just modestly slow it down a bit. So my bottom line is, we're in an earnings fueled bull market that appears set to continue given the health of the earnings cycle. But we also need to recognize that, risks do remain, whether they are related to geopolitical events, valuation, Fed policy, or potential technology changes. And so while I expect the bull market to continue, it's unlikely to be a linear path higher, and investors should be prepared for bouts of volatility along the way.
So, Jeremy, if we step back from the markets for a minute, a big part of the story still comes down to the broader economic backdrop. So how would you characterize the current state of the U.S. economy? And as you look ahead, what signals are you watching most closely?
Yeah, I'd characterize the U.S. economy as resilient, but still very K-shaped. At a headline level, growth has held up better than investors expected. As we just talked about, the labor market weakness we saw in the second half of last year and the early stages of this year seems to have passed, and we've seen a bit of a reacceleration of job growth in recent months. And as I mentioned, you know, corporate earnings have been strong, which is typically a very good leading indicator for labor markets. But beneath the surface, the sources of that economic growth are uneven, hence the K-shaped. And that's a key point investors need to understand, right? So what does this K-shaped economy really look like? For consumption, which is the biggest part of our economy, you know, the high-end consumer is really driving much of the growth. And that's been fueled by, you know, healthy balance sheets, you know, rising asset prices, whether it be, you know, housing or financial assets, and solid income growth. But the lower-end consumer continues to be under pressure after several years of elevated inflation that has outpaced wage growth. And so even as inflation has moderated from its peak, just that cumulative increase in prices and above average or above trend inflation has weighed heavily on households that are not benefiting from rising asset prices as they have less flexibility. You know, my nuanced perspective on the K-shaped economy is that it also applies to the business spending component of GDP. And, you know, most people discuss GDP and they say that the consumer spending is 2/3 of the economy, and that's true. But it's that business spending segment, which while it's only 15 to 20% of the economy, tends to be more cyclical and more directionally consistent with whether the economy is accelerating or decelerating. And there we also have a K-shaped economy. You know, the top of the K is AI infrastructure, and that's been a major, growth engine, supporting demand across semiconductors, power, data centers, networking, and other industrial-related supply chains. The bottom of the K is more traditional manufacturing and broader capital investment. And that's really been slumping for much of the past 3 years under the pressure of higher interest rates, policy uncertainty, and geopolitical risks. I would say that the good news there is that while, you know, we're not seeing a lot of improvements in the bottom of the K in the consumer spending landscape, we are seeing green shoots in the bottom of the K in business spending. You know, whether it is the stronger ISM readings that we've seen this year or a number of industrial companies just talking about improvements in end markets that have been struggling. And so, you know, the bottom line on the U.S. economy from my perspective is that it's still on solid footing, but it's not a uniform story. And then you asked about, you know, sort of the signals and what am I watching most closely? I would say first, it's inflation, because even though inflation is moderated from its peak, it's still, you know, running above where policymakers would like it to be. And the cumulative impact of higher prices is still weighing on lower end consumers, as I mentioned. I'm also watching whether the high end consumer continues to spend at such a robust pace. You know, just putting some numbers behind this, the top decile of consumers by income represent almost half of all consumer spending. So consumers at the top of the K really drive the aggregate consumer spending data and ultimately, you know, the U.S. economy. And then finally, I'm watching for confirmation whether the early signs of improvement in the bottom of the K in business spending or traditional manufacturing and capital spending, and whether to see if they broaden. And if that happens, you know, the economy can be less dependent on that high-end consumer and AI infrastructure story alone, which would make the expansion healthier and more durable, in my view.
Jeremy, I know the thing you were watching yesterday was Warsh's first meeting as chair wrapping up yesterday. As you mentioned, inflation is still running a bit hot. So what stood out the most to you from that meeting, and how does it shape your thinking on the policy path ahead?
You know, lots to discuss in terms of the Federal Reserve change. So, look, the headline decision yesterday of keeping rates steady was not a surprise, right? It was the fourth consecutive meeting where rates were unchanged, and it was Warsh's, you know, the new Fed chair's first meeting, and the decision was unanimous. But the real story was not the hold. The real story was the tone, and it was incrementally more hawkish than markets were perhaps expecting. You know, the biggest surprise was the dot plot. The Fed removed the easing bias from the statement, but that had largely been expected. What was more notable was that 9 FOMC participants, so effectively half the committee, penciled in at least one rate hike in 2026, and 6 participants saw at least 50 basis points of hikes. And that's a meaningful shift. It tells you the committee's balance of risks has moved more firmly towards inflation and away from concerns about the labor market. And you can see that in the economic projections. The Fed raised its 2026 core PCE inflation forecast up from 2.7% to 3.3%. It also raised its core PCE forecast to 2.5% from 2.2%. So that's higher than many of that had expected. At the same time, the Fed lowered its GDP forecast more modestly, just from 2.4% to 2.2%. And so the messaging really coming from the Fed is not a recessionary message. It's more of a growth is still solid, but inflation is too high message. And then Chair Warsh's communication style was clearly, you know, a big focus yesterday. And I would say, you know, that had stood out to me, right? The statement was much shorter. There was no forward guidance. And Warsh said forward guidance is not well suited for this market environment. He also didn't provide his own dot in the dot plot, which is a clear and notable departure from the prior communication framework. And so, in essence, what we saw yesterday was not just a policy message, it was a regime change in how the Fed, or this Fed, that's led by the new chair, wants to communicate. And then maybe finally, you know, Warsh was very clear that inflation is still the focus. And that's why he was incrementally more hawkish. He emphasized that inflation has been above the 2% target for 5 years and said the committee is, quote, unambiguously and unanimously, end quote, committed to price stability. And he reiterated that the 2% target is not up for review. So with inflation closer to 3% and the Fed reiterating the 2% target, you know, it's clear that, you know, their clear goal right now is bringing down inflation. So a little bit incrementally more hawkish. I would say, you know, how does that shape my thinking? I would say that investors need to be a bit more cautious around assuming that the next move is a cut. Well, I don't think that we're going to see a rate hike, given that we are seeing declines in energy prices and that should bring down, you know, inflationary measures. I would say it's very unlikely that the Fed is going to ease anytime soon. They're much more likely that they're on hold for, you know, a longer period of time. It certainly doesn't mean that hikes are guaranteed, but it does mean that just the hurdle for rate hikes is moved higher. And the Fed wants more evidence, you know, probably several months of evidence that inflation is decelerating, moving back towards its 2% target. And then for markets, the distinction is important, right? A higher for longer Fed driven by resilient growth can be manageable. But if the Fed is forced to, you know, if inflation does not come down as expected, and the Fed is forced to stay more restrictive because inflation is either sticky, stubbornly high, or potentially reaccelerating, that's a much tougher backdrop for equity markets, especially parts of the markets that are more dependent on lower interest rates or discount rates, like stocks tied to housing or auto end markets. And it would threaten sort of that broadening out in the lower part of the K for the industrial sector.
So, Jeremy, let's touch on a topic that's been getting quite a bit of attention lately. We're starting to see a large pipeline of mega cap IPOs coming to market. What does that signal to you? And should investors be worried about excessive investor exuberance? Or are we seeing signs of a bubble?
Look, generally, a strong IPO market and healthy capital market activity is a good signal that investors view the economic expansion as sustainable. You know, companies see a window to come public, investors are more willing to fund that growth, and market conditions are supportive enough to absorb new issuance. And that's, like, you know, a healthy signal that, you know, regarding animal spirits and business confidence, and it gives investors access to new businesses and can broaden the opportunity set for investors. But, you know, to your point and the tone of the question, there have been times that very high levels of IPOs can also be a warning sign if, you know, valuations are being driven more by hype or compelling narratives rather than by, you know, fundamentals. You know, regarding signs of a bubble, and particularly most of the concerns today are, you know, are we in an AI bubble? There certainly has been a lot of comparisons to the current, or, you know, comparing the current AI cycle to the internet bubble from the late 90s. And while I would say that there are some clear similarities, you know, such as investors being excited about a new technology and tech stocks leading the market higher, you know, there are many more significant differences that lead me to conclude that we are not likely in a bubble for AI stocks. What are those differences? Well, first, even just related to IPO activity, right? Even assuming we see the two well-rumored frontier model providers go public this year, that would put equity issuance this year at just about 1% of the $72 trillion market cap of the U.S. equity market. And that's just about in line with, or maybe slightly higher than, the long-term average level dollar value of IPOs relative to the market cap of the U.S. market. Just for context, you know, the peak of IPO activity relative to the market cap of the U.S. market in the late 1990s was a little over 2%, so almost twice as large. So we're not really seeing bubble-like behavior in terms of the magnitude of IPOs in aggregate coming to market. And then similarly, you know, valuations are not excessive in the way they had been back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Today, the tech sector trades at 24 times forward earnings, less than half of the peak valuation of 55 times earnings that we saw at the peak of the internet bubble. And then finally, more fundamentally, you know, bubbles burst when there's, you know, simply just too much capacity built up in a specific area after a meaningful overbuild and not enough demand. And while capital spending on AI infrastructure has been rising rapidly, demand for AI products and services is still outstripping supply. And that's really the key point and the key difference from the late 90s, where we had an overbuild of fiber optic cable, where supply outstripped demand. And so today, you know, the spending on AI should not be, you know, viewed in a vacuum. It is clearly being pulled by real consumer demand for compute, data center capacity, you know, frontier models, software, and AI-enabled services. And so, you know, overall, you know, I don't think it's likely we're in a bubble. You know, sure, there can be pockets of exuberance, especially when expectations have moved up sharply higher, where companies are being valued on very aggressive earnings assumptions. But my bottom line is that as long as demand continues to outstrip supply, I think it's just inaccurate to label the current build-out in AI as a bubble.
So Jeremy, thank you again for joining us and for sharing your insights.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.